Before we get started with this episode, I wanted to let you know that May is Mental Health Awareness Month. In honor of this, I'm making my signature course, Resiliency Sprint, 50% off just for podcast listeners. You also get lifetime access to CBT Family Toolbox, over 100 activities, resources, and ideas to bring cognitive behavioral tools to your family. Head to childanxietysupport.com/resiliencysprint to learn all about this foundational course. And when you sign up, use code PODCAST to get 50% off both the coached and uncoached versions. This offer is only good till May 31st, so make sure you sign up now. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Child Anxiety Fact Podcast. My name is Dawn Friedman, and I'm the owner of Child Anxiety Support, a membership for parents of anxious kids. I have my master's in clinical counseling and additional postgraduate training in child anxiety disorders, including exposure and response prevention and the Supportive Parenting for Anxious Childhood Emotions Program, or SPACE program, which was designed by Dr. Ellie Lebowitz of the Yale Child Study Center. I'm also certified in infant toddler mental health. FAQ stands for Frequently Asked Questions, and each week I'll be answering your questions about childhood and teen anxiety. Let's get started. This week's episode of the Child Anxiety FAQ asks the questions, what are some causes of separation anxiety disorder? This is a good question, although I am not going to limit it to just talk about separation anxiety disorder, and instead talk generally about how anxiety develops. Now, before we get into this, let's be really clear. Not everyone will develop an anxiety disorder, even if they are in the exact same space at the exact same time. You can have two children that grow up in the same family and have the same parents and go through more or less the same growing up, and one of them may end up with an anxiety disorder and the other may not. And that's because we all have differently shaped brains. We all have brains that work a little differently. People are incredibly unique. Two people can be in a car accident, and one person may develop post-traumatic stress disorder, and the other will not. And it's not a failure on the part of the person who developed PTSD. It is not an accomplishment of the person who did not. We have differently shaped brains. That means our brains process and take in information differently. And also, it depends on what happens around us at the time of the car accident. There's a whole context of the way that we live and where we are in our lives. And for children, that also comes down to where they are developmentally. Very often, when people have a child who is struggling with anxiety, they want to trace it back to a certain event, as if we could find this event, and then we could somehow fix this event, and then that person wouldn't have anxiety. Now, in the case of anxiety that is part of a post-traumatic stress disorder, that person maybe dealing with that specific traumatic event could change the way they experience the rest of their lives, could change their anxiety experience. So yeah, if you have been in a car accident and that car accident caused you trauma and you now have PTSD and it has created anxiety in your life, then going back and treating that traumatic event, identifying it, getting some EMDR or other trauma treatment, trauma-focused CBT is something we sometimes use with children with trauma, then yeah, that might help the anxiety. But that's not usually how anxiety works. Lots and lots and lots of people have anxiety because they have anxious brains, and their anxious brains have created anxiety in their lives. That said, there are ways that anxiety can be perpetuated in a family. There are ways that we as parents can unintentionally and sometimes intentionally, well, we're not intentionally creating anxiety, but we are intentionally teaching our children to be cautious around things, and that leads to their experience of anxiety. And so I wanted to talk about how fear develops, how we learn to be fearful. The question is specifically about separation anxiety disorder. And so we'll talk about it in that context, but I do want you to know that I'm only teasing out separation anxiety disorder because the person who asked the question did, and what I'm talking about can apply to all sorts of anxiety. It doesn't have to just be separation anxiety disorder. Okay, let's talk about that. In general, there are four ways that fear develops, and fear is at the heart of anxiety, or more specifically, anxiety is a sort of dread of something that scares us. So it's not just fear, it's a little more than fear. But we're going to talk about how fear develops, and there are four ways. One of those ways is direct conditioning. In the case of separation anxiety disorder, that might be you were separated from your parents at the mall as a very small child, and you were lost and you were scared, and being scared about that has created fear about being separated from your parents. It's a very, this thing happened and now I am afraid. For a phobia, it would be like, I was bitten by a snake and now I am afraid of snakes. It is that clear. This happened and so this is how I behave. And that is a very direct way, direct conditioning. It is also not particularly common. We often are looking for some kind of direct conditioning event. And I will say that if we are looking for it, sometimes we will find it, but that doesn't mean that's actually what made it happen. If your child was separated from you, that they got lost in a mall, that does not mean they will now have separation anxiety. And if they go on to develop separation anxiety, we will never be able to point to that event in the mall and say that is what caused it. It might have contributed to it, but other children who maybe were separated from their parents at a mall are not necessarily going to develop separation anxiety. This is what I'm saying about it being pretty complicated. But that's one of the ways, direct conditioning. The other way is observational learning. And this is, again, this is about the parents, what the parents have to do with it. In the case of separation anxiety, this might be that the child picks up on the parent getting very nervous. If the parent is struggling to separate from the child who's worried about them, the child is watching that parent and seeing their anxiety, and they're saying, okay, I get it. This is a dangerous situation. I should be afraid. Our children are very sensitive to us. They need to be. They literally are depending on their survival, on following our cues. Some kids are more sensitive than others. Some kids are super sensitive and some kids are not, right? You know that because maybe you've got two kids that are very different in this way. You could have a parent who is really nervous about separating from their child, and that is not necessarily going to cause separation anxiety. It may perpetuate it. It may tip the child over into separation anxiety. But again, if the child is not prone to anxiety anyway, then they may pick up on their parents' discomfort, but they won't necessarily internalize it. The child who is going to develop separation anxiety, they're maybe really tuned into that nervous parent and they're starting to internalize it. They start making that their own reality instead of saying, wow, it looks like my parent is going through some things. I'm trying to paint a picture that this is not a one-to-one causality. This is just part of the big picture. All right, so that's observational learning. The child is watching the parent or watching the caregiver or watching the other people in the world and learning that is how the world works. This is a dangerous situation. I should be afraid. Now, the third way is information transfer, which is similar to observational learning because somebody is passing it on to the child. But in this case, they are doing it very explicitly. This would be a parent who would say, you cannot be away from me. It is dangerous for you. Never yet seen a case of separation anxiety that a parent was saying, you should be afraid of being away from me. I do, though, see that parents who unintentionally pass on worries about, say, going to a party where there might be strange people, who maybe say, you need to be careful, there'll be strangers at the party, or those kids can be kind of mean at the party, or make sure you don't do that thing you always do because people might not like you if you do that thing. Where I see information transfer more often is less a parent saying you should be afraid as it is a parent sending other messages that create fear in the child. Let's think about it in the case of being afraid of snakes. A parent could say, hey, watch it. Snakes are really scary. But it could also be a parent saying something as innocuous as make sure that you wear tall boots and tuck your pants into your socks because there are snakes. So the parent could be giving information that is useful, is good advice, and the child then takes that and becomes fearful. Parents sometimes are intentionally giving information. They are often unintentionally creating fear in their child, and that would be information transfer. As I said with separation anxiety, I've yet to meet a parent who says, it is very dangerous for you not to be with me all of the time, but the parent might say things like, don't go out of my sight at the playground. There are strangers at the playground. There might be mean kids at the playground. And say other things that unintentionally tell the child it is dangerous for you to be separated from me. And that would be information transfer. But here is the interesting thing. The fourth way that fear can happen is no good reason. We are simply afraid. And that's where I'm talking about that anxious brain. That's called non-associative learning. And what it is the child has just learned it. They've just learned it for no reason that we'll be able to ferret out. Maybe, again, we could go back in hindsight, go, maybe it's this. Maybe it's that. Maybe they watched a TV show where something happened. Maybe they read a book where something happened. And maybe that's true. We might never know. Sometimes we are just more fearful people. One of the things I've talked about in other episodes of this podcast is that people who are prone to anxiety are prone to be more negative. They have an information processing bias, and they are more likely to see danger and potential bad things than other people. It is just the way they see the world. It is the opposite of rose-colored glasses. They have glasses that tint the world with a little bit of fear. They are very good at seeing where things might go wrong, and they lock onto those things. They are what-if kids, but what if? What if a tornado comes? We'll go in the basement, you say. What if there is no basement to go to? They say, oh my gosh, you tell them. There's not going to be a tornado. It's fine. These kids are what-if kids. There's no real reason. We can say, oh, but they read a book about tornadoes. They saw a TV show about tornadoes. I am afraid of tornadoes. I told them, hey, if a tornado comes, we need to go down in the basement. But sometimes we're just scared of things. Sometimes things are just scary. When we think about these four ways that fear can develop, we can also look, though, at the ways out from it, right? So direct conditioning is a scary thing happened, and now I'm scared of the scary thing. I was separated from my parents in a mall, and now I'm afraid it'll happen again. It is totally understandable. Again, if it comes down to trauma, then we can think about seeking out trauma therapy. EMDR is a terrific trauma therapy. There are practitioners who do that with children. There's also trauma-focused CBT, which is a very specific kind of CBT. There is trauma-informed play therapy. Basically, if you have a child that there is a specific event that you can identify and the child cannot get past that event, they are unable to process the event, then that makes sense to go and get some therapy around that specific event. That's the way out of direct conditioning. In observational learning, which is they've seen us be afraid, they've seen us react in scared ways, there are some things that we can do. One is that we can step out of it. We can notice, oh shoot, I think that this is coming from me and I'm going to interrupt it. We could deal with our own fear. Let's say you're afraid of cats and you don't want your kids to be afraid of cats. You could yourself work through your fear of cats. You could even show your child, this is how I work through my fear of cats. You could do some breathing exercise and model for your child how you manage your anxiety about it. Because observational learning, you can teach them things like fear, but you can also teach them things like coping. So in the Child Anxiety Support Program, we are always talking about our own worries, about our child's worries. And in the context of worrying about our child, we can deal with our worry and then give those skills to our child, either through their observational learning, we just do it, we don't lecture them about it, we just do it, or through information transfer. So that's the other one. We can start noticing when our messaging unintentionally is creating fear. We can come up with more positive ways to share safety information. We do not have to remind our children of stranger danger over and over again. We do not need to remind our children over and over again that things might be dangerous. We can start learning how to trust them, how to trust that they also want to stay safe, how to give them information in a way that they can consume without getting a whole lot of fear. And this is very complicated. I'm not saying that it's easy when we're talking about things that are scary. How do we do it in a way that doesn't scare our child? That's going to be very individual, but it's something to think about. How can you share information? How can you transfer information that they need to have in ways that doesn't scare them? And just as we can shift observational learning by showing them how to manage fear, we can shift information transfer by giving them more positive information. If we are the ones with those fear-colored glasses, we can practice putting on some rose-colored glasses. We can practice challenging our own ideas about what is frightening and worrisome and use that language to give new ways of processing that information, transferring that information to our children. And then in non-associative learning, which is your kid is just anxious, you don't know why, can't figure it out, that's just where they come from, we can tackle that too. We can notice the ways that our children are interpreting the world themselves. The information transfer that we're giving them, they're giving it to themselves. We can teach them how to put on more reasonable rose-colored glasses. We can teach them how to cope with the anxiety that comes with living in an uncertain world. In other words, the ways into anxiety are also the ways out to anxiety. We can look at our child and say, how is this anxiety perpetuating itself? How are we as a family continuing to perpetuate it? And how can I give my child the ability to unhook from this pattern? The first step is unhooking ourselves from the pattern. I hope this makes sense. I hope this more or less answered the question of causes of anxiety, but also gave you some hope and clues in how to continue to free your family from the trap of child anxiety. Thank you so much for tuning in this week. If you have a question you would like me to answer on the show, please go to childanxietysupport.com/FAQ. And if you'd like to learn more about the Child Anxiety Support membership, please go to childanxietysupport.com. The membership offers courses, live events, and community to help you design a personalized program to free your family from the trap of child anxiety. I hope you'll consider subscribing to the podcast and sharing it with any friends or family who you think might find it helpful. You can get more of my child anxiety content over at Instagram, where I'm Dawn Friedman, MSED, or on Facebook at the Child Anxiety Support page. Thanks again, and have a great week.